You are listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. The term treason was tossed around by some observers in recent months in reference to Donald Trump and comments he's made about Russian President Vladimir Putin. But do comments like that actually constitute treason or something very different? Jeremy Duda of the Arizona Capital Times explores the broader topic and its history in his new book, his first, called If This Be Treason, The American Rogues and Rebels Who Walked the Line Between Dissent and Betrayal. And Jeremy, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
So let's define treason as the Constitution defines it.
Well, in the Constitution, it is defined as levying war against the United States or providing aid or comfort to its enemies. And but as you mentioned, we hear this thrown around so often, you know, against Donald Trump, against Hillary Clinton, against pretty much every politician and president we've ever had. And most of the times you hear that term used, people mean it more in kind of the general terms of you're being a disloyal American, you're betraying the country, something like that.
So over the course of history, and you looked into a lot of history for this book, does it weaken it at all to have it thrown around like that, the actual concept?
Probably not. I mean, just because we so rarely see an actual indictment or conviction. We haven't had a conviction for treason in this country, I think, since the early 50s. We actually had someone, I think about a decade ago, charged with it. He was later killed in a drone strike, so that case never played out. But we so rarely, you know, see any kind of indictment or conviction or charge of that. I think if we saw that, it would be, you know, generally kind of a bombshell.
Now, you were referring to the American Taliban,
yes.
John Walker Lind.
Now, actually, it was not him. It was another American. He wasn't. I think that kind of goes to show how rare this is, that obviously he would have fit the criteria under what he was accused of taking up arms against his country, but he was not charged with that.
Thanks for correcting me. I would have thought that was kind of obvious. Let's go and let's sort of take history backwards. So let's start with Edward Snowden. You write a little bit about Snowden in the epilogue of the book. Where does he fit? He's facing charges, but of course he's not in the U.S. Has there been real talk about charging him with treason as opposed to these other things?
I think that's probably been kicked around a lot. Obviously, people have used, his detractors have used the term, you know, treason and traitor to describe him. But he's charged under the Espionage Act, not with treason. And I think Snowden kind of encapsulates the kind of concept behind his book quite perfectly in that, obviously, a lot of people believe he has betrayed his country. He's facing charges living in Russia in exile right now. A lot of people believe that what he did was out of patriotism and believe that it was a good thing. But so that term has really been thrown around a lot, in terms of him.
When we consider how different a country is when it is blooming, as the U.S. was when the Constitution was written, and here we are a couple of hundred years later, did it seem like because of the time the Constitution was written, the fact that there was a revolution involved and everything else, that there was just more day-to-day concern by the founders about treason because breaking off from another country, whereas today, someone, in order to commit treason, it would have to be, one would think, completely different drama because of the different setting we're in right now.
Sure. Well, at the time that the Constitution was written, at the time of the Revolutionary War, this was a big concern of the founders of the country, the framers of the Constitution, not so much as much concerned about people committing it, but concerned about the way government defines it, because under British rule, it was a much looser definition. There was a story, I believe, is told in the at the Constitutional Convention about someone in Britain who had wished death on some anonymous person who had killed his favorite buck, and he was charged with treason because that person turned out to be the king. So the founding fathers, they were very well aware of the way that this concept of that law could be misused against citizens by the government, and that's why they put this very precise definition in the Constitution in the first place.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Jeremy Duda of the Arizona Capital Times. We're talking about his first book, If This Be Treason, The American Rogues and Rebels Who Walked the Line Between Dissent and Betrayal. And Jeremy will be at Changing Hands Bookstore coming up on November the 14th. Nicholas Trist is an interesting story, especially because even geographically, very close to Arizona. Give us an idea of how he ended up around here and why treason was tossed around with him.
Well, Nicholas Trist, he was one of the top people over at the State Department during the administration of President James K. Polk during the Mexican War. Now, he was very loyal member of the administration, loyal Southern Democrat. So when it came time, after we'd been rolling through Mexico for a while to kind of forge a peace treaty, President Polk and Secretary of State Buchanan decided he was the guy to send down there. Now, once he got down there, after he'd watched the war unfold a bit, he decided that he wasn't really okay with what he was seeing happen. He thought we were being very oppressive towards Mexico. We'd obviously taken a ton of their land. And so he started really questioning the rightness of what the U.S. was doing. President Polk had kind of got wind of the fact that he wasn't so sympathetic to the war aims anymore, ordered him recalled back to the United States. Polk, with some urging from General Winfield Scott, decided I'm going to ignore this order. I'm going to, you know, defy my president, and I'm going to stay down here to forge not a just treaty, but the least bad treaty he could create with Mexico. And obviously the result of that, we were sitting on the land acquired under that treaty. But had it not been for that, there was a lot of talk in Washington, in Congress, in the president's cabinet about taking a lot more land than we had at the time. Our troops were in Mexico City. Some people wanted to go hundreds of miles south of where our border is now. Some people talked about taking the entire country. Trist did not want to see that happen, so he stayed there to make the treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo.
Earlier, you mentioned the early 1950s, and you have a really interesting chapter about sort of the McCarthy era, the Red Scare era. And the names that always pop to mind for me, you know, when Richard Nixon was there and whatnot, how much of a period do you think, how important was that in terms of treason, in terms of modern-day America, in terms of our thoughts, the average American thinking about that?
I think it was very significant because that even though we didn't see, I don't think we ever actually saw any treason indictments or convictions out of the Cold War, that was obviously an era when that term was used very heavily against anyone suspected of having communist sympathies, of anyone having communist leanings. And so when I started writing this book, I knew I wanted something out of that era. And there's so many well-known incidents. And I ended up finding an extremely fascinating chapter of history that isn't so well-known even to history buffs like myself, about what was known as the Smith Act trial, a trial against about 11 top-ranking members of the American Communist Party. And they were basically, they were charged under a law that basically made it, the way they used it, made it illegal to be a communist.
Were there any that didn't make the cut for you? You've got 12 stories. Because one that popped to mind for me, and again, to extend this to treason, I think would be ridiculous, but it did pop to mind, with Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, that was one as well where I presume he was seen as a traitor in some sense.
Sure, and he gets some mention in my book. There's one chapter about kind of brought more broadly about press leaks, and it focuses mostly on the Chicago Tribune in December of 1941 revealing President Roosevelt's war plans, very secret war plans for Europe. And this was, they printed this several days before the attack on Pearl Harbor. And later in that chapter, we discuss other, the most famous incident of press leaks, at least prior to Snowden, in this country, which was Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers.
Now, as a political journalist, you see how people are on different sides of things. Is there any reason to believe that as people seem more divided, maybe the political divide will somehow narrow at some point? But at this point, is there any reason to think that that would be something that would be tossed around even more? The idea, not necessarily even to actually bring people up on treason charges, but are we hearing more of it as we see the country more divided?
I think so. I mean, we've seen, you know, so much more polarization in American politics. And in this presidential year, in this very unique presidential race especially, you hear that tossed around a lot about, you know, both of the candidates.
So let's, I guess I sort of alluded to this, but is there anything, was it one of those things where the publisher and the editor said, all right, Jeremy, we've got to limit you to this number? Or was there a little bit of a battle of which would make the cut and which didn't?
No, the publisher actually came up with the concept and said, well, it's up to you. Find, we want 12 examples, and I found 12. Actually, out there was some narrowing down, and one of the things I wanted to do is avoid people who were actually charged or convicted of treason. Aaron Burr stands out as someone who, had I not been kind of trying to avoid the actual treason charges, who definitely would have merited a chapter in the book.
And how long did it take you to put it all together?
About 7 months. Spent a lot of time poring through old books at the ASU library. Spent a lot of time going through the correspondence of the founding fathers, looking through old records of congressional debates from the 1790s. There's a lot that went into that.
And you still found a lot of time to cover the governor's office at the Capitol Times, which we appreciate as well.
No problem. Yeah, if this was weekends, nights, mornings, any time I could find some spare time. It's definitely pretty tough with a full-time job, but definitely worth it.
Jeremy Duda's first book is called If This Be Treason, The American Rogues and Rebels Who Walk the Line Between Dissent and Betrayal. If you want to meet Jeremy and have your book signed, you can go to Changing Hands Bookstore on November the 14th. Jeremy, thanks for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.